Well, hello and welcome to episode 37 of the Going Deeper podcast. My name is JD and we are excited to be here today to talk about the most recent lesson in the Go to Work series. Here with me this morning to talk about this stuff is Jeff.
Good morning, everybody.
And Adam.
Good morning.
And today we're going to talk about the most recent lesson in the series Go to Work. And we're talking about my role in the work environment, part one. This is a little bit of a two-part lesson. So we started this past week with a discussion about how we, in the work environment, can manage relationships well between employees and bosses. We're going to spend a little time talking about that lesson and what we learned from it, what we walked away with. But this morning, we're going to start with just kind of a fun question and kind of keep it on the positive side of things. Guys, if you would, just talk a little bit about a cool experience or a good experience you've had with either a boss or someone in authority over you?
My very first boss I thought he was somebody who really cared about his employees, and it was evident just in the way he treated you. And you know, even though my job was to be the janitor, the kid that came in the evenings and cleaned the floors and cleaned the bathrooms and all that kind of stuff, he had a way of making you feel like that was a really important job, mm-hmm. and that it meant a lot to the overall success of the business. And I remember when I was getting ready to go off to college, because I worked there from my sophomore year until I went away to college, and when I was getting ready to go to college, he was kind of like asking me if I didn't want to get into like a management training program and, you know, because they were going to move him up and he was going to be going to another store someplace else. And you know, he's kind of hinting that he wanted to take me with him and that kind of thing. So he had this way of making you really feel valued.
That's cool. Adam, what about you?
Well, my mind went actually towards my dad when I was like in high school, and I'd work for my dad because he owns and kind of has his own business and everything like that. And I remember this one day we were actually working on our own house. We were working on some like the roof and replacing some shingles and everything. And he was just harping on us to make sure that we, you know, stepped in the right places, you know, that we didn't fall through like the drywall and all this kind of stuff and everything. And like, he just kept harping on us, like where to step, where's okay, where's not, you know. And I remember I went to take a break and I went down and I turned on, I think like ESPN or something, and I was eating lunch, and all of a sudden I hear this just and then a boom, like just a huge boom and crash and crack. And I go, and it came from like our laundry room. So I go running back there, and my mom and my sister were in the house. We all go running back there. My dad's laying on the laundry room floor. There's a huge hole in the roof, and he looks up and he yells, "I fell through the roof." Yes, you did. There's a massive hole in the ceiling, and there's drywall laying around you. And in that moment, my dad turned into Homer Simpson in my mind. And I was hysterically laughing, and I had to leave the room because I felt so bad, because I could tell he was in pain. But it was just, oh man, I died. So it was great.
That's funny. You know, I had one of the, kind of switch it up a little bit. I had a really good football coach when I was young. And there was, you know, I played Little League football down at Western Brown because, Hillsborough didn't have, a league at the time. And, you know, we met this guy, you know, Coach Bickett, and he was really just a good guy. And the cool thing was, over the 4 years that I played, he traveled up with the team every year. So we kept the same coach, same players every year. And so I played for him for 4 years, and he really just, I think, understood how to coach little kids. He cared about us. He loved us. He'd pick on some. He'd yell at others. He'd pull others to the side. He really kind of took the time to get to know what was going to work with each kid, and he used those he used that knowledge that he had about each of us to coach us in the best way possible. And it was fun because he understood, and I don't know how, I mean, probably just from experimentation, that I was not the kind of kid that really needed to be yelled at to learn something. And so he figured out that he could just kind of walk over and like, okay, this is why you're fumbling the snap, or this is how you need to read this play versus, you know, screaming at me. Some other kids, they needed that kick in the tail, like, you know, and he'd holler at them. You know, other kids, they didn't need anything said to them. They just kind of needed a look, you know, like, it's just, he knew how to engage his people. And then he worked those angles really, really effectively. And it was fun to watch him coach. And it was fun to be a player under him. I'll be honest. Like, I had other coaches that obviously were far more technical because I played up into college, and you've got, you know, way different X's and O's in college than you have in high school and junior high, and especially down in kids, you know, kids football. But I don't think I ever had a coach that cared more about the players, and understood that reality as well as he did, that I had for such a long time. I mean, I got to give a shout out to our one of our employees, Eric Callahan, who also coached me in junior high, and he was awesome too. But that experience was really fun, especially at a young age, to watch a coach do so well with players, and it was a whole lot of fun. So this week we got several communication cards in that I thought were worth mentioning. So we had multiples from the humorous communication card ministry. For those of you that were there in attendance on Sunday, I used the example of some like small containers and gradually building up to larger containers to represent, you know, levels of authority in life, and Russ, and then finally I kind of slapped this big, giant, like 3-5 gallon bucket on the table representing God, and Russ Boone wrote in, your choice to represent God pales, P-A-I-L-S, in comparison to the real thing. Thank you, Russ, for that. I'm sure that I could have come up with a better container to represent God. I took some heat in programming too for that, just FYI, because apparently I put it sticker out, and the sticker was not fully, you know, attached to the bucket. Was kind of hanging there, so I took some heat from the programming team about having. I also took some heat from the programming team for having mismatched Tupperware. you know, like my Gladware didn't all match, and some of the middle aged ladies on the programming team were less than impressed with my, you know. But I had one, you know, one of them in particular, you know, Mary Jean, I felt very, you know, I'm going to call her out because she's been a part of the podcast before. You know, Mary Jean called me out and said that at my age, why would I have a full matching set of Gladware? Because, you know, why would JD ever buy that, right? You know, so thanks, Mary Jean, for making me feel like a bad husband. I'm just kidding. So then we had one in from Mike Boone. So the Boone boys were active this week, which is always good to see. He wrote in, you're right, JD, I should really start praying for my bosses. I'm going to start by praying the scripture, Psalm 58, verse 6.
Let's hope his boss isn't listening in.
Right. So Psalm 58, 6, for those of you in the our New International Version fans, says, break the teeth in their mouths, O God. Lord, tear out the fangs of those lions. You know, Mike, maybe we should talk, but you know, got I hope
issues.
I hope your boss is okay. Now on to some serious responses. We had an individual write in and say, Moses and the Israelites were led by God away from slaves and masters. They were in slavery. God led them out of that, and then just kind of said, you know, what's the deal with that? If we're supposed to obey our masters, and there's the reality that God led them out of slavery and away from their masters, how should we understand that in light of the testimony from Ephesians chapter 6?
Well, I think, you know, when you look at the Old Testament, God had made a promise to Abraham years and years before he led them out of Egypt. He had made a promise to Abraham that his descendants would occupy a land that was set aside for them. And at that time had come for them to go and occupy that land. And so God led them out. So this was the fulfillment of a previously made promise. Mm-hmm. And the scripture is clear that God's good to his word.
Right. Right. One of the things that, you know, when I initially, you know, read that, that jumped out at me was at any point God can choose to do what he wants with people that are in a particular position, because as we kind of mentioned, and this is something we banked off of pretty heavily, the idea is that from Scripture we are all under authority. We're all ultimately under God's authority, and that never changes. I made the comment in first service, but not in second, that in at no point in Revelation or any of the prophetic statements in the Bible about what's coming next does God ever give up his authority. So even though we end up in a place where we are with him in a renewed and redeemed world with new and redeemed bodies, the reality is we don't become the bosses at that point. God True. Still is the boss of everybody, even in heaven. And so at no point do we ever actually exist outside of authority.
True.
It's just a matter of whose authority at what time. And so God, as the ultimate authority, can choose to move a person out of one situation under which they are in a particular type of work under a particular type of master and into another. But even though he moved them out of slavery to the Egyptians, the Bible is really clear that they were forming a covenant with him to serve him.
Sure.
They were really just moving to a different work under a different master.
Sure, because you think about where was the first place that he led them. It's to Mount Sinai. to receive the law.
Right.
And so he was revealing his will to them at that point.
Right. Right.
Yeah, and it's for his glory and for his purpose is why he's moving them in that situation. And so it's like you were even saying there that he can work and change in anyone's life that he so chooses. And in this case, this was really still kind of the beginning of his story and the story of even Christ coming along the line. And
right.
And so it's it was used for his kingdom and right. his purpose. So
right. Now we had one final one. We have a communication code that said, as you all know, and this is an individual writing to us in response, and this is something that we did know, that this individual always refers to herself as God's favorite. She feels as though having that perspective makes her feel really grateful for everything that God gives her. And so she constantly will say things like, "Hey, oh, I guess I'm just God's favorite. I guess I'm just God's favorite." So she wrote, "As you know, I always feel that I'm God's favorite. I am delighted, however, to find out that we must all be his favorites because apparently he has none." A reference to one of the passages that I discussed in the lesson, Ephesians 6:9. That says you both, referring to both slaves and masters, you both have the same master in heaven and he has no favorites. Which I think is one of the important things for us to remember about that particular lesson. And I wonder if you guys would just comment on that idea that regardless of of what human authority we may be operating under. God doesn't see favorites in, or God doesn't see a distinction between people. Help us understand that a little bit.
Well, I think, you know, we're all created in the image of God. It goes back to creation.
Right.
And so we're all, in that sense, equal in his eyes. Now, we're unequal in gifting. I mean, we don't all have the same gifts. Some of us have more talent in certain areas than others. And so, you know, there are differences or distinctions. But we're all equal in his sight as his children.
Right. And one of the things that I think from this particular lesson, you know, referring to whether it's a boss or an employee, you know, top of the apple cart or the bottom, you know, the reality is God looks at those individuals the same way and sees them as both equally responsible to serve him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and talking about the different gifts and everything, to be honest, you stole what I was going to say, so I don't appreciate that. But thinking about those gifts, those gifts are what make up the body of Christ. Mm-hmm. We all have that equal share. We all have our own gifts, our own talents, and our own passions, our own desires. And without each other, there's going to be gaping holes within the body of Christ. And so we need each other, and God needs us to spread his word and to spread his love to the people of the Hillsborough area, the Highland County area. And so so we all play those equal roles within the body of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Now, I think there is some distinction in how God views those he places in authority within the church.
Right.
And you have to understand that, I think, even though we're all equal, the Bible's pretty clear that those who are in authority in the church will be held to account for that,
right,
for how they exercise that authority and how they led. The same with those who teach his word. I mean, you know, the Bible says on the one hand, those who lead the flock will have to give an account for their leadership.
Right.
Those who teach have to be very careful that they rightly divide. That's the old King James Version, rightly divide the word of truth. Mm. And so there is some perhaps heightened accountability,
right,
for how you exercise leadership or authority in the church.
Right. Let's kind of jump into one of the topics that it came out of one of the statements that you said a minute ago, Dad. You indicated that we're not all equal in talent or ability or gifting. And I feel like that's one of the interesting elements of our cultural experience right now. I really kind of heavily went down the road of life ain't fair, get used to it. And I very specifically and intentionally used the word inequity, because the pursuit of equity across, you know, all cultural and social lines at this point seems to be one of the driving influences of our culture at this point. I think that's a dangerous pursuit to some degree or another.
Incredibly dangerous, I think. Yes.
In a fallen world. Why would you say so? And why does that dissatisfaction with certain fundamental inequities create so many problems for us?
Well, you know, I think the Bible's very realistic in its view of humanity. Right. And the reality is we don't all have the same gifts. We don't all have equality in talent.
Right.
There is also some inequality in opportunity.
Sure.
That's reality. I mean, you think of the opportunities that we have here in America, and then when we go to Haiti, we see people whose economic opportunities are not the same as ours.
Right.
That's reality. In the idea that we're ever going to, in a fallen world, be able to eliminate all inequality across the board is a pipe dream. Mm-hmm. And you think about it, even in the Bible, Jesus uses the example of the three servants, and they don't all get the same.
Right.
One gets five, one gets three, one gets one. The issue is not what talent or what ability you've received. The issue is what do you do with what you have.
Right.
The problem we have in our culture now is that we expect the one that got five to have some of that taken away so that the ones that got two and the ones that got one are equal to him.
Right.
Okay, that's what our society calls equity. Mm-hmm. What they forget is that for whatever reason, God gave five to one.
Right.
Okay. But now we need to take that away from him so that the one with two talents and the one with one talent have more. Mm-hmm. And every time that's been tried in a social setting, it has resulted in mass graves. It just has.
Right.
You think about the Soviet Union in 1917 and in the 20s. I mean, when they began to collectivize the farms, lots of people died. Mm-hmm. Because they were forcing them to give up or to give up their land or to give up portions of their crops and that sort of thing. And they were like, no, we worked for this. Mm-hmm. And any time that has been tried, it has resulted in mass graves.
I think, like, oh, I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
I think one thing I love going, like, I love going on mission trips. I love going to places like Haiti, like Mexico, like Jamaica, some of the places I've experienced. And when you go to those places where they don't live in America and they don't have everything at their fingertips, there's something amazing and something inspiring and even beautiful in the faith that they have.
True.
It is often something that is almost, I don't know, we can't fully understand.
Like foreign to us.
Yes. Like, and not only that, not only the faith that they have, but the community that they often build because of a necessity for one another, and then the faith because of the necessity for God. Mm-hmm. Here in America, it's almost unfortunate that we have so much at our fingertips because we don't have that necessity of God, or at least we don't believe so.
Right.
We don't have the necessity of community because we are self-dependent. And in some ways, those things are good. Don't get me wrong. But at the same time, we often struggle with our faith even more so than people who are in faith of other countries because they have that necessity. Mm-hmm. You know, they have that need. And I mean, that's why there's even countries around the world who are starting to send missionaries to us. To America. Sure. And it's because we struggle more with faith because we have so much at our fingertips because we don't have that need. And so there's almost a benefit to the different levels. And it's kind of an amazing thing for those that are in that situation that have that need.
You know, one of the interesting messages I heard in the last year was a podcast from Tim Keller, and he talked about how the faith in Christ grows the most rapidly among those who are by far the most oppressed. Mm-hmm. He says if you look at where Christianity grows, he says it grows where everybody's poor. And it grows where people, especially where people are oppressed, right? Because the reality is it's a message to those who are oppressed. I mean, you think about Jesus. I mean, one of his first public acts was to go into a synagogue and read from Isaiah and say, I've come to pronounce good news to the poor, all right, to the downtrodden, to the beaten of life. There's hope, and there's an eternal hope. And you know, I think one of the challenges we truly face because we are a country that was founded upon the principle of, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that we get to be the masters of our own destiny. The truly poor in our world don't have that impression. they truly don't think that because their life doesn't reflect that. They're in many cases a product to some degree of their experience, and so oftentimes they're looking for something outside of them to raise them up, something outside of them to give them peace and hope in the midst of difficult circumstances. And so for many in our world, and I've talked to people from Haiti too, that have a faith that would really challenge me, and a reliance upon God that really truly challenges my own, because they don't have a store down the street. They don't know where their next meal's coming from. They don't know if they're ever going to have the opportunity to get the nice job that's going to allow them to pay for a wall around their house, because in Haiti you need it. Like that is reality. And so faith grows in those environments. You know, it's one of the Beatitudes, the poor in spirit. It was one of the first things Jesus talked about. Is that recollection and that understanding that we need someone beyond ourselves.
Well, you think about it, and I thought you hit this really well on Sunday. The whole equity idea that's becoming such a thing in our culture, and what I find really unfortunate about it is that equity is always equated in economic terms.
Sure.
Okay. The only thing that matters is that we're all economically equal. I mean, there's no spiritual element to it at all. And why is that? It's because economics is our God.
Right.
Okay, that's our God. I want more than what I have. And if somebody else has more than the rest of us, then we'll take it. And that's really, and I thought you made a great point when you said that whole class envy thing is driven by covetousness, because it's, I want what somebody else has.
Right.
Whether they work to get it or inherit it, doesn't matter. If they have more than me, I want it. And that's because economics has become our God.
Mm. Certainly a challenging thing, I think, for us is to remember that parable of the talents that you raised just a minute ago. I read that just the other day. And I think in reflecting on that, we don't like that God saw someone worth five and someone else worth two. You know, we don't like that. I think to some degree or another, and that's, I mean, that's a hard reality. I think we don't all have the same gifts. We don't all have the same abilities. And I think for us in our culture, we all want to think we could be the five talent person, and we just maybe aren't. Mm-hmm. And the question is whether or not we trust God enough, or whether or not we are willing to submit to that authority enough to be good with two. Mm-hmm. Or one. I mean, in the story, the guy with two was good with getting two, and he made something out of the two. The guy with one didn't do jack squat.
Right. And the guy with five and the guy with two were commended, right, for their service, because you think about it. I mean, as far as we know from the story, he brings all three of them in. Mm-hmm. So the guy with two knew the guy with five got more.
Right.
Okay. So he could have done the same thing the guy with one did. He didn't give me as much as the five, so I'm going to sit here and do nothing. Right. But he doesn't. He goes out, he makes the most of what he has with what he's been given. And that's what God asks of each of us.
Right.
Make the most you can with what you've been given.
I think that's really important. And it gets us to that idea of authority, right? So we've got a God that ultimately decides the gifts we receive and the abilities and talents we receive. We don't choose that in and of ourselves. You know, if I, I made the statement on Sunday. I mean, I can't make myself be LeBron James. You know, I can't do it. There's nothing I can will myself into, and there's no amount of practice that I can undergo that's gonna make me 6'8", 275 and run and jump like a gazelle. Like I just, it's not ever gonna happen. It can't.
And LeBron James has his own limitations. Think about it. He will never be a professional jockey.
Right.
It's not happening. Yeah. Right. Okay, he is out of that simply because of the way God created
Built him. Right.
So he has his limitations as well. We all have them.
Right. Right. I think that's one of the things that we have to be very careful of too. Is as a culture, we value certain things. And we certainly value things that can make you a lot of money.
Economics is our God.
Right. And so the challenge, I think, for us is being ready and willing to accept that God maybe made us good in this area. And we use it. And we'll receive the joy that comes from using that well. But if we try to force ourselves into other things where we're maybe less skilled, less capable, less talented, the reality is we will experience more frustration and not be as successful.
True. True. And we experience this frustration when we try to operate outside our gift mix, so to speak. There's a lot of frustration that goes with that because you're not going to be as successful. It's not going to be something that brings the kind of satisfaction that you get when you're in your own zone, the zone God created you to be in. And imagine, I mean, I think one of the things that I imagine is the day when Good News Gathering, every person at Good News Gathering that calls this their church home, excels at the way God made them. I mean, can you imagine a church where every single person that called that church their church home knew what their gift was and was determined to excel, to use it to the glory of God? Mm-hmm. That church would change the world. It would.
Right. Right. It's a powerful image and something that I think would... I mean, it should be the goal for any church, is to help its people be the people God made them to be to the very best of their ability. Mm-hmm. And to put them in that position is the very best that we can do for them because they were made by God. I remember hearing Francis Chan talk about his realization that there were many people coming on a weekly basis to experience his gift, but were not offering their gift to anyone. You know, a bunch of people that had grown up, had believed, had gotten baptized, had chosen to walk with God, you know, and they were coming. He said, I had thousands of people coming on a weekly basis to come experience me giving my gift, but doing very little to give theirs and to know and to exercise theirs. And he said that was greatly distressing to him.
Sure. And it should be, because I really think that as leaders and as teachers in a church, that's one of the things that we will account for. It's whether we encouraged our people to get involved and to use their talents and their gifts, and whether we help them learn what those are.
Right.
I mean, you think about it, that's why we do the class series, especially class 301, is to help people, and we give them tools during that class to try and discover how God's wired them up to serve.
Right.
And that's a huge part, I believe, of our responsibility. Because, I mean, I've had people who were Christians for years tell me, I don't have a gift. Well, that's wrong. Biblically, that's totally inaccurate. The Bible assures us that we all have a gift. And so it's important for us as leaders to work against that idea and also help people understand, hey, I can discover how God's wired me up. And here it is, and now let's get after it.
I forget what our exact discussion was, but a few weeks ago, I know that I was talking about just getting in and just serving and figuring mm-hmm. out what your passions are. And that's exactly what that is mm-hmm. I can agree is that sometimes it's hard for us to see what is my gift, you know, like what has God blessed me with? And a lot of times we don't see it because we're not doing anything.
Right.
If we get out there and we start serving kids, or we start serving elderly, or we start serving around the church or the community, you know, a passion will develop within us, and even skill will develop within us, and we will discover what that gift is. And so, if I would just say, if you're one of those people that, you know, you're sitting there and you're like, I have no idea what my gift is, are you involved? Would be my first question. And if not, how can we get you involved? Or if you are involved, maybe we need to shift where you're at. Try something else out. And eventually God will develop that passion and that skill set within you. And it's just a matter of jumping in and finding that.
And, you know, a lot of times I think the people around us, the people that know us well, see it before we do.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, quite often I think your spouse can see it in you. They know what your gift is sometimes before you realize it. And so I would encourage people that maybe have that question, what's my gift, or what is it that I bring to the table, to ask the people close to them, because chances are they've already seen it.
Right. Now, I want to talk briefly because I talked about it, and I was very honest with people on Sunday about the idea that if you're working for a great boss or you're working for a crummy boss, it doesn't really matter. The reality is, if they give you something to do, or they tell you where we're headed and that's where you need to go, the reality is, unless they're telling you to disobey Christ, your responsibility is pretty much just to follow their directions and to do what they say. But I do want to spend a few minutes kind of talking to people who are struggling with their current situation, that are struggling with how to deal with a difficult boss, a difficult work situation, a situation where the authority figure over them is either negative or disagreeable or difficult. How can we encourage people to make wise decisions in that particular setting? Because there are those out there that are immediately going to tune out, or at least kind of, you know, kind of struggle with a lesson similar to the one that I gave, because of the fact that they face such a difficult work situation. How do we encourage them to make the right decisions and do the right things? And at the same time, what kind of skills might we give them, or practical steps might we give them to help them make the most of that situation?
I think maybe the first thing that you have to do if you're in a difficult work situation is you have to kind of step back and remember to be thankful for what you do have in that work situation. Okay. Whether you like it or not, that work situation allows you to pay your bills, mm-hmm. to provide a life for yourself and your family, or whoever it is you may have to support, and those kind of things. So even in a negative working environment, there are positives that come with being able to work and have an income. Okay, it may have its negative aspects, but it's not all bad.
Right.
There are positives that come with it. And so I guess I would start by saying, remember those. And if you have to remind yourself, write them down and look at them every morning before you walk in the office. That would be the first thing I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say, I mean, also, and I mean, this is kind of, I don't know, not necessarily the cheesy answer, but what seemingly the obvious answer is also making it a part of your daily prayer. When you wake up in the morning, be praying about your relationship with your boss. Be praying about how you handle your relationship with your boss throughout the day. You know, like when things come up, make sure you're prayerfully walking into every situation and every meeting that you might have, and everything that you do throughout the day. Make that kind of one of the leading thoughts on your mind when you go in to pray, and maybe even increase the amount in which you're praying throughout the day, so that way you can constantly be bringing peace to your own mind. I think, and that's a big thing, is as you're praying, pray for that peace, pray for the example that you're laying before not just your boss but for your coworkers, and be constantly just having that on your mind. But I'd also just say is like, the one thing that I guess in this, I want to make sure that nobody, misunderstands in this, is that if you're in a situation with a boss where you feel unsafe for some reason, and that's the type of bad boss situation you're in, if you feel unsafe, you need to get away. And that's okay. And I say that because like my wife has been in that situation. Right. And so I won't go into details about that, but there was a situation where she felt unsafe. That's different. You need to get away from that situation. But so don't misunderstand that. Don't mistake that. If there's any safety issue in that, you know, just, you need to get away.
Right. You know, one thing that I would encourage us to do, and I think it goes a little bit back to your safety. I think you've got to assess that before you do any kind of confrontation. But the reality is there are ways to appropriately bring up concerns in the workplace. And there maybe in your workplace there are certain channels for that. If you've got like an HR department, things of that nature, you can get feedback on how to approach that issue with the particular person that's in authority over you if you're struggling with that relationship. But one thing that I cannot say that I've always practiced, but one thing I think is really important and something that I've learned and grown in over the years is the reality is Matthew 18 works as well for the workplace as it does for the church. And it's as important in the workplace as it is for the church, because the reality is when you prove to a person in authority over you that rather than gossiping about them, you're going to go directly to them. And especially if you come off like a person who is committed to ensuring that the relationship is the best it can be, but man, this is making it very difficult on us. Those conversations are hard, and they can be very difficult. And the reality is that I haven't always handled those conversations particularly well in my life. There have been a couple that I, you know, if as I've thought back about them and stuff like that, I feel like I could have handled it better. But the reality is that in general, I've almost always felt like when I address the issue head on, I got a better result than me just sitting around wasting a bunch of time gossiping about it with my coworkers and never accomplishing anything. Oftentimes, you know, those bad boss type situations only end up creating gossip in the office, and that jacks down productivity and keeps people from getting things done that they need to get done. And the thing that we have to understand is that when we're doing that, we're participating in a sinful situation. And when we do that, we're not giving our best. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't possibly stop working to gossip about your boss and be doing your best work at the same time. Those two things can't happen simultaneously. So the reality is I do think, and there are some bosses that are scary and difficult to deal with. And, you know, again, you always, I think Adam is absolutely right. You always have to assess for safety in a situation. And if it's not safe, just getting away is probably the right move. But don't allow the positional difference between you to be a reason that you spend a load of time disrespecting them behind their back, but never telling them to their face. Mm-hmm. I think that creates a lot more issues than it solves, and it keeps you in a negative situation because you never actually lift a finger to help the boss get better. Because we can, those of us in boss situations, I can tell you with great certainty, we can all get better. And so, you know, sometimes it's those conversations with people who are currently operating beneath us somewhere on the authority chart that are the most helpful when they point out that we're not doing something we should do.
You know, you're bringing up just kind of, we haven't really talked from the boss point of view much today, I guess. It's been more so the employee side of things, I guess. But yeah, you know, one of my previous bosses, his name was Chris. One reason he was my youth mentor when I was in high school. I interned for him for 2 years, and then I worked full-time with him for 6 years where he was my boss. So he was kind of over me for a long period of time. And one of the reasons why I respected him the most, and one of the reasons why I did want to partner with him in ministry for so long, was because I constantly saw him trying to grow in the way in which he related to people and the way that in which he led people. He's naturally the type of person that it has the bulldog mentality. He is kind of like, he is the boss in the room, you know, like, he is the high director. If you take like the, personality test or whatever, like, and so a lot of people initially are kind of put off by him because of that. But if you hang around and you continue to help out, he was constantly trying to grow and figure out ways to learn that person, to better lead that person, and even stepping outside of his own natural instincts and comfort zone to be able to do so. And so for you, those of you who are bosses out there, I would encourage you to do the same. That bought my loyalty with him. That bought it. And that's why I stuck with him for so long. And so if you know, your boss out there and you want that loyalty, you want great relationships within your company. I mean, that's one thing to constantly be self-evaluating. How am I treating my people and what can I do to treat them better on an individual basis? Right. And I think that'll go a long ways.
Right. I think two things I would say, to follow up on what we've been talking about here is number one, never, if you're an employee, never allow your work to compromise your Christianity. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, you know, I remember years ago I had a case where my client, who in a sense is your boss, mm-hmm. because they're paying you to represent them, and he came in and said, now this is the truth. This is what actually happened. And he laid out the story, and then he said, but this is what we're going to say. And I have this witness who will come in and corroborate this. All of fabrication. Well, and I just told him, I said, I'm sorry, but I'm not the attorney that will represent you. Because I'm not going to fabricate to a court. I'm not permitted to do that legally.
Right.
But morally, it's wrong.
Right.
You know, you just told me this is an elaborate lie, and you have witnesses who will come in and support it, and I'm not getting involved in that. So never allow your work or your employment to compromise your Christianity. That's one thing. The second thing is if you feel that it's necessary to leave, whether it's because of safety issues or maybe you just got a better job, I don't know. If you have to leave well. In other words, work as hard as you possibly can until the day you leave. Give your employer notice that you're leaving. I think it's wrong when in you know, this just happened in the NFL this past weekend. A starting player quit at halftime. Put on his street clothes and walked out of the locker room. Nobody knew. Nobody knew it was coming. Nobody had any notice. And so what's the result? His teammates are angry, as well they should be.
Right.
And you know, we don't treat employers that way. Christians should not.
Right.
So leave well, I think. It's very important for us.
Well, guys, we hope this has been informative. We want to talk for just a second about a couple of things that are coming up in the near future. This coming week is a week where we go back into the discussion of what's my role in the work environment? And part two is really about how we can be people of faith in the work environment. Dad, why don't you give us just a quick add on that lesson?
What we're talking about here is how do you impact your coworkers and those who you interact with in the work environment? How is it possible to impact them for Jesus Christ? To let them know that you're a person of faith, and how can we do that in a way that you know, in our culture today that can be problematic at some places of employment. But how is it that we can do that in a way that fits with the environment that we're in, and also enables us to impact people?
Also coming up at the end of the month is the beginning of a church-wide life group study surrounding the book Radical. Could you give us just a quick snippet on what that's going to be like?
Well, you know, each year we try to do a church-wide life group study in to emphasize our life group initiative, because we really believe that personal spiritual growth, that when it comes to that, life groups are a powerful tool to help us grow spiritually. So we're encouraging our entire family to get involved. The book is entitled Radical. It's by a pastor by the name of David Platt. And it's really about how do we live out our faith in a radical way, in a way that's in many ways consistent with what we see in the early church. So that's kind of what we're looking at there.
Finally, guys, coming up later on in the year, on November 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, is our annual celebration of God's gift of music called Roots. We are going to be getting out heavy marketing stuff to you guys very soon. We'll be hitting social media with it. We'll be passing out invite cards and posters and things of that nature, and getting ready to really do the very best that we can to offer people in our community the opportunity to come out and have a great night, have a lot of fun, but also to hear the message of God and the message of Jesus through song. And so we're going to be getting that stuff out. We'd be inviting you guys to share and to invite and to, you know, use your social media as a way of putting that out there, because we'd really like to see a lot of people come and be a part of this and experience this with us. So we hope that you guys will join in on that with us, as that's coming up here in the next 6 weeks. So. Guys, we hope this has been informative and fun, and that you've enjoyed being a part of this conversation with us. If you have any questions or any comments about the lessons, please feel free to either shoot those to us via email at info@goodnewsgathering.org, or put them on a communication card and drop them in the bins in the back of the auditorium on your way out. We'll be happy to address those, just like we did some of the communication cards today. So we hope that you will join in this conversation with us and be a part of it, and we hope you guys have a great day. We'll talk to you later.
Take care, everybody.
Have a good one.